All of us hold grudges, but many of us think we shouldn't. In How to Hold a Grudge, From Resentment to Contentment, The Power of Grudges to Transform Your Life, internationally acclaimed crime fiction writer Sophie Hanna digs into the universal but widely misunderstood practice of holding grudges and outlines a model for maintaining and embracing our grudges to live, she says, happier, healthier lives. Sophie's my guest today on 15 with the Author. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So how do you define a grudge?
Well, I define it differently from how all the dictionaries define it. So the dictionaries all say that a grudge is a feeling of hot resentment. And I know from my own experience that a grudge is not a feeling. A grudge is a story that we choose to remember because it's useful to us in the present and in the future.
The upside down in the doorway story of yours really kicks off your grudge holding. Can you share that with our listeners?
Yes. So what happened was I was staying with some friends of mine, Michael and Linda, and I was asleep in their guest room. And in the middle of the night, I suddenly jolted awake with my heart beating wildly. And I realized that the door was wide open and the light was on. And I think instinctively I must have realized that someone had come into the room, turned the light on and opened the door. And I saw Michael, my host and my friend, sort of bent double in the doorway, looking under the bed. So I was kind of scared and shocked. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm just looking for the dog. I can't find my dog. And I just wondered if he'd come in here." Which the dog couldn't have come in anyway because my door was closed anyway. And as Michael was saying this, Linda, Michael's wife, called out from the next room, "Oh, it's okay, Michael, the dog's in here." And this made me realize that Michael, in checking the house to look for the dog, hadn't looked in all the other rooms where nobody was asleep before waking me up. So that was a very significant grudge for me because that was the first grudge that I ever was aware of forming in real time. So normally what used to happen until that grudge was that something would happen, I'd be annoyed about it or upset about it, then I'd notice several weeks later that I still was annoyed. With Michael upside down in the doorway, as it was happening, as I realized that he'd woken me up and turned on the light in my room before he'd even checked in the room, those things, I could actually feel myself thinking, this is a story I need to remember. This is significant. I'm going to be able to use this story. It's going to be helpful to me and learn a lesson from it. So for me, that sort of marked the turning point between my sort of unconscious automatic grudge holding and when I turned into someone who deliberately constructed grudge stories in order to benefit from them and learn from them.
And that's the interesting piece, I think, because most of us are told that, hey, you got to let go and move on. But you are saying, hold on to the grudge because it's good for us and it can teach us something. What did that one teach you?
Well, it taught me that Michael, you know, in many ways, he has lots of great qualities. He's great fun to be with. He can be very kind and generous about the people who he's close to, but he is not good as a host. He's not good at having house guests because in his house, he basically likes to be able to do exactly what he wants. So he's not the right person to stay with if you want to be able to sleep. Because, you know, I connected that experience of him breaking into my room in the middle of the night and switching the light on, I connected that story, Michael's stories from the past. So I suddenly realized that quite often when I stayed at Michael and Linda's house, Michael would wake me up at 6 or 7 in the morning by playing really loud music just outside my room. And when I said to him, "Could you not play really loud music before I'm awake when I'm staying?" he would say things like, "Oh, come on, I like listening to music, and that's when I get up." So I realized that the lesson I needed to learn was, if I want to see Michael and Linda and visit them, that's absolutely fine, but I should stay in a hotel, because Michael is never going to accept that house guests need to be allowed to sleep and not interrupted whenever it suits them.
And, you know, it's very interesting. I want to mention we're speaking with Sophie Hannah. She is the author of How to Hold a Grudge, From Resentment to Contentment. And what's interesting about this is as I was going through How to Hold a Grudge, I found myself saying, oh, yeah, that's true, several times. But there's still that notion in the back of your mind that says, this is wrong. You should probably be passive aggressive instead.
Yeah, no, I mean, being passive aggressive is something that lots of us find ourselves doing, but usually we're passive aggressive when we feel that we can't respond in the way we'd like to. I think that's mm-hmm. what causes passive aggression, where you've got a reaction that you'd like to have, and you're repressing it for some reason. So let's say someone does something, it annoys you, you don't want to reveal that it's annoyed you, but it kind of seeps out. Because what we should do is decide how we want to respond and then respond in that way. So for me, the way I've decided that I like to respond, if somebody does something that makes me angry or upset, if I think it needs to be remembered and if I want to kind of validate to myself my experience of thinking it's not okay that that happened, that person treated me badly and that is not okay, then I will allow myself, in fact, I will encourage myself to create a grudge, construct that grudge, write it down as a story, because a grudge is a story, not a feeling, and then analyze the story, make a list of all the lessons I can learn from it, make a list of all the ways in which I can benefit from having this grudge in my life. You know, often a grudge will point us in the direction of what values are important to us. So the Michael upside down in the doorway grudge story reveals to me that it's really important to me that when people come and stay in my house, that they should feel they can get a good night's sleep and that their hosts are not going to wake them up in the middle of the night or early in the morning. So I choose to do that activity to actually create my grudge, which then acts as a sort of symbolic commemorative justice object. Then you don't have the sense of, oh, they did that terrible thing to me and they just got away with it. You know, nothing happened to them. It's just as though it might as well not have happened. If you've created your grudge, then it's not as though it never happened, because your grudge is the evidence that it did happen. And so you feel that you have a certain measure of justice. You can then take steps to protect yourself by maybe thinking slightly differently about how you want to approach your relationship with that person in the future. And all of that means that in terms of the negative feelings which are caused by the grudge sparking incident, those actually move on much more quickly. So what I found was that for me to create my grudge, it sort of took all the energy uh-huh. out of the negative feelings, because suddenly my energy was going into creating the grudge story and learning from it. The negative feelings then just very quickly dissolve, and I found that emotionally I was ready to forgive almost immediately. So these days, if someone does something really annoying or awful to me, because I know that I'm going to create my grudge and that will sort of take care of the justice side of things and the future behavior side of things, I emotionally I'm ready to forgive almost immediately and continue to like that person or love them, continue to have fun with them, and I can still keep them in my life. So really, my method of grudge holding, what I'm really suggesting is that if you intellectually give yourself permission to say that behavior was not okay and it matters, then it frees you up emotionally to move on, which of course is the opposite of what we've all been taught. What we've all been taught is that holding a grudge is a barrier mm-hmm. to forgiving somebody. And but that is a complete misunderstanding, and it's based on the idea that a grudge is a feeling. But I can prove that a grudge is not a feeling, because most of my grudges, the negative feelings associated with the original incident, have passed long ago. But I still have the grudge. And what that means is the story still feels relevant. I still want to remember it. That person doesn't have a completely clean slate in my mind, because it's almost like if you think of like a school, most schools will have a system where if you do one naughty thing, it might be put in your report in your file that you did that naughty thing. Doesn't mean the teachers are going to snarl at you every time you pass them on the corridor, but they're going to just make a note that you did that one thing. That's a bit like how grudges work. So the person doesn't have a completely clean slate, but emotionally you can absolutely forgive them and mm-hmm. give them every chance to behave better in future.
I really like your way far better.
Thank you. Me too.
And I'll tell you, the book is How to Hold a Grudge from Resentment to Contentment by Sophie Hanna is really good, folks. It's a great read. It's interesting. And as you heard the philosophy, it really makes a lot of sense. At least it does in my view. Putting it into action is really how your book helps. And you do that with identifying different types of grudges. You've got a grudge quiz. There's also something called the Grudge Fold Path.
The Grudge Fold Path is the name I've given my method of approaching grudges. So if you are following the Grudge Fold Path, as I am, then all that means is that you will, when something grudge-worthy happens, you will create your grudge, as I explain in the book, going through all the stages, writing it down, analyzing it, classifying it, grading it. It's all explained in great detail in the book. And then recognizing that by doing this, you enable yourself to move on emotionally much more quickly. So that's what the Grudge Fold Path means.
And what's a grudge it?
A grudget is a grudge budget. I just couldn't resist the abbreviation. There's a chapter in the book called How to Be a Responsible Grudge Holder. And one of the things that you need to do in order to be a responsible grudge holder is to manage your grudget in a proper way. And what that basically means is, well, there's several aspects to it. One is make sure to hold as many gratitude grudges as regular grudges. So just as a grudge is a story that we want to remember because it has significance, a story about something bad or wrong maybe that someone did to us, mm-hmm. a gratitude grudge is a story we want to remember because it's something very significant that someone did that was positive. Our gratitude grudge stories are those things that people did that were really kind or helpful, or things that really stand out and we don't want to forget them because it was something really nice that someone did for us. Whereas our regular grudge stories are stories about something wrong or upsetting or unfair that someone did to us. And that aspect of the grudge, it's just a way of saying, you know, yes, it is important to remember these stories about the things that people did wrong to us that had a big impact on us, but it's equally important to have as many positive stories as negative ones. So that's one aspect of the grudge. Another one is making sure that you never acquire a grudge that is based on an invalid or incorrect premise. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if somebody called Fiona is incredibly rude and spiteful to me, it would be completely reasonable of me to create a grudge about Fiona. It would not be reasonable or valid for me to create a grudge about everybody who happens to be called Fiona. So if one member of a group, any group, does something grudge-worthy and you decide to have a grudge about everyone in that group, even the ones who haven't done the grudge-worthy behavior, then that would be an invalid grudge.
Okay.
And then another part of the grudge is to make sure that you regularly look at your grudges and check that you need to keep them all, because sometimes you find that you don't need to keep a grudge anymore. It's no longer useful. You know, for example, if Michael rang me up tonight and said, I have just realized what a selfish host I am. How could I have ever thought it was okay to interrupt my guest's sleep on a regular basis? It's definitely not okay. And now I've realized this, I will never do it again. Well, then I wouldn't need my Michael grudge anymore because he would have got it and I wouldn't have to worry about that behavior from him anymore.
And how does Michael feel about you now? I'm just curious.
he I think he probably knew that I chose, you know, because I didn't break off the friendship.
Right.
He must have noticed that I no longer go and stay the night. But to be honest, I don't think he minds that because he doesn't actually like having guests.
Right.
He likes, you know, visiting people, but he doesn't like having people to stay. Mm-hmm. And, maybe even that was why he behaved like that. You know, subconsciously, maybe he was thinking, if I wake people up enough times in the middle of the night, maybe I won't have to have any help at all.
Well, that worked out for everybody then, didn't it?
It did, absolutely.
Well, what's interesting, too, is, you know, you're an internationally best-selling writer of psychological crime fiction, and then you come out with this. How did you make that leap, and how long did it take you to write this book?
It took me about 6 months.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it seems weird. I know that, you know, it's so different from my regular kind of books that I write. But I've just always been very interested in grudges. I've always read a lot of self-help books as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, self-help, probably apart from crime, self-help is a genre that I read most of. And so I always kind of thought maybe one day I'll write a self-help book. And I decided to write one about grudges because I'd read a lot of self-help books that sort of just say, let go of anger, let go of, mm-hmm. resentment, let go of bitterness. And whenever I get to those bits in self-help books, I always think to myself, that is very easy to say. And it's clearly good for us if we haven't got anger, resentment, and bitterness. But none of these books is offering what I thought was a reasonable or plausible way to actually approach getting rid of them. Because if you're feeling desperately bitter and resentful because you've just found out that your husband has secretly been married to someone else for the last 5 years and has another family that you knew nothing about,
mm-hmm.
if you feel resentful and bitter about that, telling yourself, I shouldn't feel bitter because it's bad for me, is not going to stop you from feeling bitter. You know, it's just not. Whereas allowing yourself to create a grudge so that you make a sort of official judgment against that behavior and a list of lessons you're going to learn and a list of ways you're going to benefit, you put that grudge in your grudge cabinet. That is a concrete step that you can do. It gives you agency. You're not just someone who's had something done to them. You are an actor in the situation, creating your grudge in your own private sort of mental court of law, almost.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a way of getting the grudge out of you and into the world as a separate object, which then is your written story. And it gives you a whole lot of actions to perform, like classifying, grading, analyzing, listing. And that is doing something about the situation. Now, you will still probably feel bitter because finding out your husband is a bigamist is quite a big deal.
Oh,
you
yes.
might feel bitter for a month or 2 months. But what you should do, if your real goal is to get rid of the feelings of bitterness, then you give yourself permission to create the grudge, follow all those steps that I've just listed. And in relation to the resentful feelings, you literally say to them, welcome resentful feelings. You have every right to be here. I completely understand why you're here, and you just stay as long as you like. Now, if we do that, if we pour positivity onto our negative feelings, then they kind of relax a bit. Whereas if we say, go away, negative feelings, I shouldn't be having you,
mm-hmm.
those negative feelings go, hang on a minute. And they get stronger and they dig in and they become entrenched. So a lot of the resentment people cling on to, I believe, is a result of society kind of constantly transmitting the message that we shouldn't be having these feelings because they're bad. Now, in fact, feelings of resentment and bitterness are not bad at all. They may be unpleasant to feel,
mm-hmm.
but they're unavoidable. They're part of the human experience. Other people that we encounter in daily life regularly are going to upset us, annoy us, enrage us. So it's simply, you know, misleading and unhelpful, I believe, to say to human beings, you shouldn't feel resentful. If someone said that to me, I'd say, well, I'm afraid I'm a human being, and I occasionally am going to feel resentful. And I find that my resentment passes much more quickly if I don't judge it negatively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a huge problem potentially with a lot of the self-help industry. Negative judgments are being made all the time about feelings which are not pleasant to feel. Yeah. And so people then have those feelings because they are unavoidable if you're a human being in the world. And then they add a further layer of negativity to the unpleasant feelings by thinking, I shouldn't be having these feelings. And mm-hmm. then there's a negative judgment as well as the negative feeling. So actually saying to people, yeah, knock yourself out, feel angry. You absolutely have every right to. In a weird sort of way, mm-hmm. the feelings of anger then relax a bit. And, you know, they may take a while to pass, but they're much more likely to pass if you don't judge them negatively.
Yeah, because you're not piling on that guilt about, oh, I'm not supposed to feel that way. Oh, well, yeah. Sophie, this has been a fantastic conversation. Your book, I really love it. How to Hold a Grudge from Resentment.
Thank you.
And I look forward, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again. Now, are you coming up with another crime fiction, or what's next for you?
So in August in the UK, I've got another crime novel coming out, which is called Haven't They Grown? And it starts when the heroine sees her best friend, who she hasn't seen for 12 years, and the best friend's children are still 5 and 3 years old, as they were 12 years ago.
Mm.
And the heroine thinks, how is this possible? But they are the same children, she's calling them by the same names, and they're still 5 and 3 years old, exactly as they were 12 years ago. So that's the sort of mystery.
Yeah, indeed. Sophie, thanks again for your time. And again, How to Hold a Grudge from Resentment to Contentment, The Power of Grudges to Transform Your Life. Thanks, Sophie.
Thank you.